Hi, everyone, and welcome to the DevMar Debugged podcast, where experts from top companies all over the world share their insights on everything developer marketing.
Learning isn't linear. I think we can all agree on that. Sometimes a quick ready-made template will do the trick. Other times, you'll need something far more comprehensive, like a three-hour course. As a Pro Plus member, you'll gain exclusive access to cutting-edge developer marketing resources, from easy-to-implement templates, mentor programs, member events, and exclusively written content. Continuous learning and staying ahead of the developer marketing curve can be hard, but with Pro Plus, it's easy.
So today we're joined by Mudit Singh, Director of Marketing and Growth at LambdaTest. So in this episode, we're chatting about marketing to developers and more specifically going beyond product-led growth methods. So hi, Mudit. Thanks for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Teresa, for having me. It's really an honor to be part of this platform, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have. And let's see. I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
Oh, great. It's very exciting to have you. And but before we get into the topic of the episode, so could you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and, well, why did you become a marketer in the first place?
So currently I'm working as a director of product and growth at a company called LambdaTest. LambdaTest, we help out developers and testers with an online test execution and orchestration infrastructure. Basically, we provide and scalable infrastructure that can help them run both manual and automation and visual regression tests on cloud. So for past 5 years, I'm one of the founding members here at LambdaTest. And for past 5 years, I've been doing a very deep dive into the whole ecosystem of software development, specifically in the software testing area, understanding what the pain points are in this area, how the developers and testers collaborate together, what are the key tools software developers and testers specifically use over their journey, and how LambdaTest, the platform that I work for, can help out in their overall specifically testing lifecycle, how it can help out. Before LambdaTest, I was with a company called AlgoWorks Technologies. Again, I was there as a person who led the marketing and sometimes sales teams as well. So I started off mainly as a developer first when I graduated, but then during that time, the era of marketing and digital marketing started off. So I started as a content writer, but then Destiny had other plans for me. So from developers to writing for developers, and now I'm a marketer for developers and marketer for developer products. So that's how my journey started, and it's currently going on. And for past 5 years, as I mentioned, it's pure product marketing for developer tools and working with other companies as well who are in the same ecosystem.
Oh, great. So like a journey where you pretty much done it all. You walk the walk and now you're just, yeah, oh, that's fantastic. Do you still do any work as a developer or?
We have... I'm not say I'm a proper developer as such, but yeah, we market a product that integrates with the development process and the testing process, specifically automation testing. A lot of code is involved in the automation testing process. So I still have to sometimes code, if nothing else, just for the documentation side of things, but more around content and content generation. So one of the key things that we help out in our marketing area is specifically creating content that is tutorial in nature, helps testers and developers start off in their automation journey specifically, and that requires a lot of tutorial based codes. So we work with a lot of third party developers as well, writers, testers who are developers first. So we collaborate with them on those content pieces, and they write the code. So sometimes I kind of run them, do a kind of a cross-check, those kind of things. But yeah, if I say work, it would be, let's say, 5 or 10% of my job, mostly around managing content planning, content writing, around other events that we are currently doing. A lot of very small stuff in the overall day that goes on.
All right. Okay. So you still have the chance to do a little bit of that then. That started you off. So in regards to marketing to developers, I'm curious because I just hear a lot of people and I've interviewed a few people who they tend to say that developers don't like marketing and that they're a very difficult audience to market to. Has this been your experience, you know, as both a developer and a marketer?
So when we started off, like my earliest experience, so I have around 12 years of experience in the field of marketing. And when we started off, the type of marketing I was doing was mainly for e-commerce companies, sometimes for other B2C type of companies. So when we went to the B2B space, there was a lot of unlearning that I had to do. A lot of things that I tried it out from the get-go that were not even working. So it's not 100% correct to say that it's not possible to market to developers. I'll say the definition of marketing change a little bit when we say when we bring or sell a developer-centric product. It's more around rather than traditional marketing methods. It's not that they do not work. They work a little bit less. So we have to kind of write a new playbook. Currently, right now, it's pretty advanced. I'll say a lot of good developer products are there who have set the path. A lot of hit and try methods we have done as well, and a lot of people are still doing as well. But the core, I will say, of a developer marketing playbook requires, rather than focusing on selling the product, focus more on enabling the end user or enabling the end developer to use your product more effectively. Highlight as few words as possible what it does, how it helps you out, and how it can make your life easier. In addition to going into, let's say, core marketing things like how it can increase your ROI or increase your productivity, those kind of things as well work, but core focus should be on the enablement side of things. So start off with things like documentation, start off with things like tutorials, start off with things like tutorial videos if required, focusing less on ads and more on how to build up a community of people, community of developers, programmers, testers, project managers, people who are involved in the whole development lifecycle. Build up a community of those people so that everybody can evolve as your product evolves as well, right? And the ultimate aim is to make their life easier, to solve a core problem statement that you have identified earlier when you are doing a product market fit, and to go deep dive into that problem statement and solve it as best a way as possible.
Why do you think, because I find that really interesting, that there's you kind of need a little bit of a different methodology, because as you said, traditional marketing doesn't work quite as well. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that developers respond more to different methods?
So one thing that we have to analyze is that usually in a developer marketing scenario, impulse buying kind of things do not happen. But impulse discovery happens. So people are finding a particular challenge when they are doing, and during that journey, they try to find out tools or libraries or any other product that can help them out in the difficulty that they are facing at that particular time. And when they go to, let's say, a web page or through ad or any other discovery source, they go to there and they do not find out, they just find out fluff. They find out how this tool help out XYZ company, increase their revenue and other things, but they do not find out what are the exact features that can help them out immediately. Is this tool something that I can use just right now to solve my problem or not? Those kind of tactics where we talked about a very enterprise-centric approach, that is how ROI increased, how this increased, numbers, but maybe not go into the features. Sometimes they do not work. So when we market to developers, we have to very focus upon how we can solve their challenges. Then at the same time, we can focus on like how much we can solve their challenges, right? So in addition, the like one word I want to kind of use over here is that they do not want to go through a fluff. They want to have a problem statement right now. They want it solved. So be Chris, be clear, be precise how exactly you are going to help them out and just go ahead and do it, right? There's also another approach that right now is very popular that is called a product-led growth or product-led approach here. So what that means is let's not put a layer of salespeople or demo people in between. Enable them to explore the product, enable them to use the product, try it out, see if it is able to help them out and as well. If they feel that, yeah, this product is something that has helped me out right now and can help me out in the long term, they will, of course, put their card over there and buy the product. So as I said earlier as well, so we have to enable them, create an ecosystem that helps them explore the product, helps them get educated from their own end, and get value out of the product immediately so that they will be able to ensure that, yeah, this is the right investment for me. I can go ahead with the product and use it for a long term.
Now, that's really good to know like that in that perspective. And we're definitely going to dive a bit more into, you know, the product-led growth. But before that, I would just like your opinion on why do you think that it's so important nowadays to market to developers? Why developers specifically? Are they gaining more influence nowadays, do you think?
This is something I'll say, this is not something new. This is happening for quite nearly 20, 15 years right now. People are adopting more and more digital technologies, and nearly all companies are right now going to digital first. In fact, even traditionally very retail companies like Adidas, Nike, and all these companies as well, they have a very, very big digital transformation strategies, and they are doing very heavy focus on digital first. So all the experience that they want to present to their end users would be a digital experience. So it has become, in fact, the strategy has become more aggressive, specifically after the pandemic when people were not able to go out and, let's say, explore traditional brick and mortar businesses. So now everybody wants to accelerate their digital experiences as well. So what that means is that the role of a developer, role of a tester, role of a whole, in fact, software development lifecycle, people are involved in that. Their role has become more and more important, strategically important for our businesses. And now they are investing very heavily in that. So to be fair, the life of a developer and tester, it has become more complex in nature. They have to do a lot of more stuff. They have to release a lot of more features. Otherwise, the business that they represent won't be able to kind of compete in the market. So their life has become more difficult in nature. They have to increase their productivity by multiple fold, specifically in life for last 5 to 10 years. After the mobile and 3G, 4G, 5G, now 6G, it's going to come. All of that innovations, it has accelerated a digital experience or accelerated digital transformation based efforts. So developer productivity is now a very important aspect. One of the ways to increase that productivity is through using or enabling developers and testers with the right set of tools. And that is seen across now. A heavy push is being done to build and scale up tools that are focused on the software development process. And that means a lot of innovations are happening. A lot of new companies are coming up that creates tools that focuses on one small problem statement. Sometimes very big companies like Microsoft, they come up with complete suites that enable software development processes. So when new and new tools are coming, now it's their job of these tools as well to reach out to developers, reach out to people whose gonna life will become easier with these tools. So this is one of the reasons why developer marketing as a profession or as a field is developing as well, where more and more tools focused on developers, focused on programmers, testers are coming in the market, and more and more requirement is coming to build up, let's say, specific ecosystem to attract developers and testers for their own specific tools. Another thing here is, like, even if we not talk about, let's say, developer tools, if we talk about other aspects, now businesses right now do not interact with each other in a traditional manner as well. Businesses as well interact in a, information tech age. They have APIs now. So they interact through programs. One, let's say, bank does not directly transfer wire from, let's say, Adidas to a bank through a checkbook. Now they do a direct hit through a payment gateway, right? So it's just one small example. But the bigger thing is all these businesses as well are interacting with each other in a regular manner through APIs, which is, again, driven by developers and testers. All of that has to be tested. All of this ecosystem has to be tested or developed upon, worked upon. For that, we need tools as well. So as the way people do business or as the way companies do business, businesses do business is changing. We are seeing more and more type of tools that make their life easier, enable these kind of interactions.
And then by developers being able to see those tools and all that, they can be the one saying to their company, you know, oh, I really like this, and then let's buy it. So I guess that sort of influence, I suppose, is actually growing as well. I'm not sure. I see, as you said, you know, with technology emerging and all that and becoming more and more complicated, it seems like it's developers who kind of understand it all. It's not, you know, sometimes non-technical people in a company. So you kind of need the developers to, not being the gatekeepers, but they'll be the ones to say, oh, no, maybe this isn't good, you know, or maybe this is really good and I want to buy that. So I find that dynamic quite interesting as well, that kind of like the power dynamics in the buying process is changing a little bit. I don't know if you agree with that, but.
No, so definitely that is, in fact, one of the things that is very happening as well. And in fact, it is something that is pioneered by companies like Amazon. So they are focused on, rather than very large, big teams of multiple hundreds of people, they focus on smaller teams of, let's say, 50, 25 people who are working on a specific problem set, so that these small teams can be very fast, or in other terms, can be very agile, right? So agile development methodology that is happening. And these companies are providing these smaller teams with a set of budget. So there are tools that are employed, let's say, organization-wide, and they require a lot of R&D and sales work, and all of those required to kind of roll out across whole companies. For example, if you want to use, let's say, HR system, so you would be something that is rolled out across whole company. But for developers, one advantage here we have is that they are provided, the whole team is provided with a set of budget, and they can use a tool for just that small set of teams. So we have seen that in the past, that there are multiple teams across, multiple geographies as well, maybe multiple projects as well, but all part of a bigger organization who are using either same tools, maybe sometimes even competing tools. So there's a possibility that a team in somewhere is using Slack, but at the same time, the other team is using Microsoft Teams or some other tool for their own efforts, right? So though companies kind of consolidate and bring all tools together company-wide, but then there is still small teams who are independent in nature, kind of acquiring different set of tools. And that also kind of opens up ecosystem a little bit. Now multiple products can exist, coexist simultaneously. And it becomes more important for all of these tools to talk with each other, create a very integrated ecosystem so that different tools used in the same team, used across same company, are able to communicate with each other. So things like APIs, again, help enable that. Tight integrations help enable that.
Right. And marketers' jobs at the same time have gotten more difficult too, right? So you kind of have to compete with all these new tools, with everything, and then attracting the developers' attention to your product. And
but it's kind of makes a little bit more easier as well, I'll say. Why? Now you have a tool that's very tightly fits within ecosystem. So what you do is instead partner with those ecosystem tools. So for example, there are a lot of tools that are in fact just working over and above the Jira ecosystem or Atlassian ecosystem, right? Whole set of tools that are just integrations over Atlassian tools and are thriving along with Atlassian, along with, well, let's say, smaller players. Or earlier when there was a company like Salesforce, so there were just tools that just integrates with Salesforce and other tools that integrates with Salesforce and enable small things that Salesforce was not able to do from their own. So on the other spectrum as well, you are a tool that is have a higher user base. Now you have an opportunity to enable other people to build tools over and above you, so that you enable an ecosystem as well. So marketers now can use this ecosystem. Marketers now can target this ecosystem that people, if you are using Jira, our tool integrates with Jira. It will make your life easier. If nothing else, you can partner with Jira or partner with Atlassian so that you guys can co-sell each other. So that kind of partnerships can happen as well. This is in fact one of the marketing, I'll say, technique we used when in our early stages at Lambda Test. In fact, it happens right now as well. We partner with, let's say, Lambda Test as a testing tool, integrates with project management tools. So we work with them on the integration side of things, integrate Lambda Test with other project management tools. And then we work with these project management tools for, let's say, co-marketing activities. We create a webinar for them. They create a webinar for us. We send newsletters for each of our audiences, create joint press releases, create joint social media engagement so that both user sets of both tools get to know about this integration and can explore like either of the tools if they are not exploring, or if they are using both tools, can integrate them and increase their productivity because this tighter integrations enable them to do more at less amount of times, right? So win-win for all, I'll say.
All right, yeah. Yeah, I haven't thought of it from that perspective, but that's also true. And would you say any of these methods you have mentioned, would they be considered product-led growth or... what we, you know, talking back to the topic of the episode, bringing it back, looking beyond that, looking beyond PLG.
Yes. So I'll say that product-led growth is something that is, in fact, very popular right now, specifically among software as a service tools. But the definition of, let's say, PLG playbook is still evolving. I'll say there are more and more things that are happening in that. Earlier, the complete focus was on user journey. Complete focus was on ensuring that if somebody lands a bad product, they are enabled as aggressively as possible and they are able to get value out of it. But then people started to realize that we have to first bring them to the product. There should be a discovery element involved in that. So people started focusing on social media platforms, on SEO, on their discoverability of that product. And that becomes part of the PLG playbook as well. So it's something that is pretty much evolving. And at the same time, it's interesting to see that things that we usually term as traditional marketing approaches are somehow or another becoming part of the PLG playbook as well. So, example, one of the things that we always used to say that, yeah, events is a pure traditional marketing thing. But now, because of, let's say, virtualization of everything, events are happening virtually at a very, let's say, fraction of a cost. And now what people are doing, they are doing very aggressively, let's say, webinars. So they term it as, let's say, product enablement webinars or demo webinars or sometimes integration webinars. But those are events as well. So it's kind of like you are doing a specific event for a specific set of audience. And now this playbook has evolved in PLG companies as well. So any PLG company, you will see there is always a Booker demo, or they will have a regular cadence of webinars that is happening either to enable their users or to educate their users more on the tool, right? And became part of the whole PLG playbook. Similarly, ads. So I'll say that developers, testers, they are not very receptive to ads, but that does not mean that the ads do not work. Sometimes they do as well. It's just you have to rethink the way you do ads as well. So it's not a traditional PLG playbook, but then things like when earlier we used to do gated content and bring audience to those gated content through ads for things like, let's say, ebooks, things like white papers. Now, this was a traditional marketing approach. Content in a bundle format, that was earlier gated. But now we are providing that content again in a bundle format, but maybe not gated. So a complete ebook on how to use particular tool to achieve this, a complete white paper on how people have been able to solve these problems, things like surveys. So developer surveys happen, people release state of XYZ surveys every time, right? So all of these were earlier traditional marketing approaches, but now they have kind of rethink the approach and put it in their core, I'll say, PLG market playbooks. So content generation is still a very much PLG thing, but they have evolved how they do it, right? So the playbook of, I'll say, a product-led growth marketing approach is still evolving.
Oh, so just to kind of for me to understand as well a little bit more. So would you say then that a lot of these things, like I said, content and social and all that, would that be PLG? But then because they keep changing over time, would that be what you'd consider looking beyond it then? You know, like, for example, with social media, then you have the ads, and then that could be as well looking a bit beyond because maybe you are using them in a way that you haven't before. Would that be fair to say? Or
yeah, definitely. So coming back to ads right now, tools like LinkedIn, platforms like LinkedIn provide you very precise targeting of that ads. Let's say I want to target these type of people who are on LinkedIn. So that precise targeting would now be, let's say, aimed toward developers or developer decision makers. And the type of ads that are provided there would be a little bit different, right? And this is seen in playbooks from companies like, let's say, GitHub, companies like Microsoft Azure, companies like Google as well. So think with Google series, whatever they do, right? So they have a pretty defined, let's say, different type of sets of ad that they target towards developers, focusing on things like productivity, features, maybe sometimes case studies, sometimes white papers. And then there's complete, I'll say, edtech companies as well. Those are also selling courses to developers, maybe to enhance their skill set. So ads still work, but the approach to do those ads are a little bit different. So once you have set up, let's say, a PLG engine, now you have to look at different things. You want to add more channels because you cannot grow until unless you have an exponentially growing different set of channels. One channel alone may not be able to scale you up until unless you are a company like Slack. Right. So, but even then, even Slack, they had to kind of add a scale. They have to start taking different approaches as well. They have to start doing events. They had to start doing ads, which is running as well right now. So once you scale up at to one level, you have to add more and more marketing channels. And that means going back to your traditional marketing routes. But again, with a twist, with the fact that your audience is a little bit different. So the way to market to them using these approaches would be a little bit different. Some may argue that, yeah, this is true for nearly everything. It depends upon the industry to industry, the type of audience you have, you tweak your ads and everything. But this, I can also say that with a product that you have, it kind of enables you with a different set of opportunity that you can run ads that do not directly convert, but push people to convert in, let's say, a PLG cycle, right? So do a little bit different approach than the traditional approach to push your core PLG engines, right, as well, right? So yeah, so that is, I'll say, way to evolve your current PLG engine to a little bit different pace.
Right, like a multi-channel approach and just thinking of new ways of kind of putting a spin on traditional marketing and yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, no, that's really interesting. So how would you say then that, say a marketer, you know, is doing all that multi-channel approach, how would they be able to measure the success of their campaign with it? Is this something they should be looking for, considering, you know, the multi-channel?
So one of the One of the best things about, let's say, a product marketing or software as a service marketing is that we have very clearly and easily defined metrics every time. We have people coming to the website, that is traffic, people coming to sign up, maybe if you're a freemium product or if are a free trial product. So people coming for a free trial, then people who are activating, who are using features of your tool, and then finally people who are selling. Sometimes if you are a bigger company, you can also add metrics around upsell. So sell one product, then you have multiple product lines. So sell more of those product lines. So kind of bring people to your site, acquisition, engage them. You have to kind of convert them and activate them, convert them, right? So all of these KPIs are pretty much mapped, and any product campaign that you do will have a direct effect on one of these things. So you are running ads, maybe you have a predefined goal of bringing more and more traffic to your website or making more signups to your website. If not that, maybe you are running a webinar. So you are running ads for that webinar. So now the aim would become to bring more registrations for that webinar. Once that webinar happens, you have a set of leads that you nurture through your, let's say, email marketing campaign. And there the tone becomes how to activate them or how to engage them and then finally convert them. So you have multiple set of funnels, and each campaign that you do would have a very well-defined objective when it starts off, that what is going to achieve for which step of the funnel. Once they have entered into that step of the funnel, then you have other set of campaigns whose job is to kind of accelerate to next step of the funnel, right? So very, I'll say, because we have, let's say, a developer mindsets as well. So we are pretty data-driven in this approach. Specifically, one of the hallmarks of a developer marketer is that they are very data-oriented. That means they have all these numbers. Whenever they are running any type of campaign, whenever they are doing any kind of marketing activity, they have all these KPIs that they can track and leverage for their next growths.
No, that's really good. Thank you for that. Yeah, it seems like it's kind of understanding where the developer is on the journey and just knowing what to do to kind of hit the right pain points and the right, how can I help them and what problem am I solving for them? So kind of knowing that will direct the rest, perhaps.
Yeah, so definitely. So one of the things we touched base when we started off this conversation was that our aim is to enable the developers to solve that problem. It becomes a little bit complex when you have multiple set of product lines, right? So or multiple set of features that do different things. So once you have, let's say, somebody who signs up, now they have a different set of expectations, maybe which is not available instantly with the page that they have visited or the tool feature that they have checked. So maybe through your email marketing, through your other set of marketing channels, you can highlight to them that I have other set of features as well. Maybe we can connect and understand what are the problem statements that you had faced, which you were not able to solve here. Maybe we have an alternative for you as well, right? So again, point here is that we have a we are building up an enablement ecosystem. So if not with your tool, maybe with your partner tools, and both of your tools can work together. If your set of features are not working, maybe you have a content which provides, let's say, solution for them. So through your content marketing efforts, let's say blogs or tutorials, you are enabling them to kind of find the solution to your problem. Build up, I'll say, kind of like a brand building exercise over here. So when they have a problem that your tool can solve, you would be the first one that they will reach out. So aim is to make the life of developers and testers easier. And whatever activities you are doing should be geared towards that core aim.
Mm. I find that really, really interesting, especially now what you just said about it's harder when you have a lot of features. So I'm kind of thinking, I guess the approach would be different, but how would you go about kind of marketing a product with a lot of features? How would you It's difficult to just promote everything, isn't it? So you kind of have to focus on one or two, I suppose. How would your approach differ in that case?
So even if you have very different set of products, usually they are all interconnected in one way to solve one core problem. So you can, let's say when we talk in terms of SEO, so your small set of features are long tail keywords that do that. But ultimately, the whole platform would be that core two phrase or two word keywords, right? So that is something you can start off. So you market your tool as something that is a bigger ecosystem, then highlight to them that, yeah, as part of this ecosystem, I also do this, I also do these, do A, B, C, the three type of things. And you have to ensure that if somebody looking for a problem statement that connects with your one feature set, they are able to discover your tool as well when they are discovering that. So let's take an example of Salesforce, right? So it's not just a CRM. It has evolved way ahead. So if somebody searches for, let's say, marketing automation tools, then also Salesforce, you are able to discover Salesforce. If you are searching for, let's say, CRM, you are also discovering Salesforce. But it's a very bigger tool that whose ultimate aim is to manage and automate enterprise operations. So those kind of things are also there in Salesforce. So you can build up complete solutions. Those kind of things are added. So in my case as well, in LambdaTest as well, we have tools that are required for a company, but sometimes all these tools are not there required. So if you are a developer who are or developer or testers who are starting off, you won't need automation testing at the get-go. You would need tools for manual testing. So I have set of tools for manual testing. Then as they evolve, they would need automation testing. They would need things like visual regression testing. Or if you are a completely different thing into mobile app development, so we need a mobile cloud. So that is also what we have here. So we have multiple different tools. But now what that means is now I have multiple products. Small set of features is, I'll say, a small set of product that I can market. So in fact, one of the reasons why all big companies have multiple product marketing managers whose job is to take care of one, let's say, one set of features. That can be done as well. That approach can be done as well. That means you have one set of features, market it, and also at the same time, highlight everywhere in your cycle that if this feature is not something for you, we have other set of features as well. Maybe through let's say the email drips that you have set up, maybe through remarketing ads. So another thing where ad comes into the picture, people who have visited your website, but now exited. So maybe you can run them a remarketing ad to find out if they were interested in other set of features, right? So those kind of things can be done. Aim is to set up a loop, set up a, let's say, an ecosystem of tools so that if not one tool can help out, maybe other set of tools or maybe a combination of other set of tools can help out.
So in your experience, where have you seen the most success with? Was it, you know, with ads? Was it anything working together, you know, with SEO, with it? So I suppose with LambdaTest or any other?
So for us, SEO has been one of the most important value drivers, but as we are growing and the pure SEO based revenue and traffic that we are building up is not the only thing we want to focus on. We want to branch out on more set of channels. So other channels are also working for us. But I'll say the one of things that companies should try off is that try those kind of things that are not, let's say, marketing as such, that are more community building or community enablement things. It will have a broader impact on what we call traditionally branding. So as I said earlier, our aim is whatever we do should be on community enablement, on that ecosystem enablement. So one of the things, for example, we did a flagship event last year, and we're going to do it again this year as well, called Test Mew. And the whole premise of that event was, rather than selling LambdaTest at that event, we should instead build up a community. We should enable other developers and testers to come together talk, discuss, and kind of plan out the future, in our case, future of testing. So bringing thought leaderships together, bringing a different set of thought leaderships, for example, from enterprises, from other tools, from open source networks, open source tools, people who are working on that, along with other industry experts together, and connect them with people who are starting off in their journey or maybe at a mature cycle, set up that community through our events, through one flagship events, and at the same time, connect our partners as well with that community so that they can either interact better, maybe get to learn better, and that build up that whole ecosystem whose job was not to drive sales for Lambitas or in fact even signups for Lambitas. The whole job was to create an ecosystem and make Lambitas part of that ecosystem so that, yeah, whenever somebody talks about, okay, this is a company, Lambitas, they always talk about, yeah, this is a company that is helping us out. This is a company that is helping our community out in the best way possible that they can do. So it's not necessarily that you start off big by doing a big event. You can do small stuff as well. Maybe contribute to open source repositories, maybe contribute either, if not monetarily, maybe through your effort, across other things that kind of helps out the developers and tester communities. And do bigger things as you grow up, as the company grows up. So, like as a developer as well, one thing, we use a lot of open source tools. We are dependent upon a lot of things that are built up by the community. Mm. Anytime we get stuck, anytime we are facing a challenge, we go to a community, find that solution to that through, let's say, Stack Overflow or other type of communities. We go to a lot of free events. We do check out a lot of YouTube videos that are there. So this is a community that is kind of helping each other out without any monetary incentive involved. So you can become part of that as well. You can enable either those creators or kind of not do a monetary event, maybe do an event that enables these creators, enables this community as well to make the life of other developers and testers easier.
I love that, especially because with community, they can be there from the start, can't they? From the product, even, you know, oh, we just had this idea, what you think of it, even just for that, to the end of, you know, can you help us test this out? Or is this working for you? Or what do you think? Or I just love that idea of just having people just can help them, but then at the same time, kind of receive that mutually beneficial relationship of they can also help you build your own product and company.
Definitely. And another thing to highlight over here is that even though it's a very open community, but sometimes what happens is that things have start to become in silos. That means a set of people are talking in a very tight-knit community, and that learning is just revolving over there, not coming out. So maybe if not directly contribute, you can contribute in a way that you can connect these silos together, bring people from different segments into a singular platform so that a learning can be shared. It can cross from one silo to another silo, or in fact, just break the silo itself, reimagine the way people are interacting to build up this ecosystem. So that can also be something that is become very interesting part of this community building. And in fact, I think one of the aspects of product growth has become a community-led growth thing, right? Mm. So people are very focused on building up these kind of communities from start, sometimes at scale, but ultimate aim has become to build up a community to help out other people in the same area, in the same, let's say, industry segment.
Absolutely. Something we do as well. And you know, hopefully we kind of try to grow our own community. So I completely understand that. I feel like, again, like we're doing now, you know, you're participating in our podcast, which is great, fantastic. And then hopefully we're also providing value. So I do feel like it's a win-win, as you said before. So I really like that idea. Yeah, that's really good. And so is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with as any final thoughts, any tips in terms of, you know, PLG or beyond PLG?
So, I think we have discussed pretty much a lot of things so far. And I still want to reiterate the core message that if you're one marketing to the developer community, focus first on in the enablement part of things. Focus first on building up an ecosystem with the aim that how I can solve the challenges of this core ecosystem. And that will translate to growth of your product as well. Another thing I want to highlight is you should be very receptive of feedback and in fact should go above and beyond to get that feedback, because this feedback from other community members is pretty much gold. It really helps you out to kind of evolve the product. Usually people say this is a job of product managers or project managers to kind of listen to the customers. But as marketers ourselves, we are more involved with the community and we are more, we have a better visibility on their pain points. So maybe we would have a better understanding about translating those pain points to product features. So it's as a marketer, it's your job as well to look deep into that community, find out what challenges they are facing, and communicate that back with your own teams that, yeah, these are the problem statements. Maybe we can help out. Maybe our tool can evolve in such a way that it helps out. So be very vigilant about the feedbacks that you can get or you are getting about your platform.
I think that's an excellent message and a fantastic way to end our episode. And I just want to thank you so much for joining me and for all your amazing insights and tips. I think this was a very insightful conversation. So thank you.
Thank you for having me ever as well, Teresa. I hope I'm able to make life of a few of our product marketers easier, developer marketers easier. And if anybody has any questions for me or something, feel free to reach out over LinkedIn. I would be very happy to help.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of DevMar Debugged. If you want to hear more from professionals in the developer marketing world, subscribe to our podcast for more expert talks. See you on the next one.